This is a Collider.com audio interview.
The basic premise of the movie fascinates me because of the fact that it is Diane, and I've tried to get used to saying that instead of Diane, because until I heard somebody say it, I didn't realize I was mispronouncing it. But it is an imaginary story, so why not make it an imaginary character? Why was it important to have her as the focus of the story that was a flight of your imagination?
Well, it actually is not. I wouldn't call it a flight of my imagination at all. It's very intricately woven into the facts and details and images of Diane Arbus's life. So as a composer or an artist might make a portrait of a person, this is my portrait, this is Stephen Schoenberg's portrait of Diane Arbus, our interpretation of what all the information we got about her and how it came out of us as a portrait of her, trying to capture her spirit and the beauty of her birth as an artist.
But, you know, having an artistic interpretation of an artist's inspiration, it seems almost like that's, you know, in a sense, hallowed ground in a way. I mean, you're an artist yourself, by virtue of being a writer. How would somebody make a movie about what inspires you to do what you do? How were you careful? Were you worried? Was there trepidation and attempts?
Careful, worried, trepidatious, no. Certainly very respectful, very in awe of her. I do think that the hallowed ground business, you know, it becomes impossible to write anything if you think something is too great to touch. And that's why it was in development for 20 years, probably. One of the things that I focused on and that Stephen and I really were very interested in was some of the facts from Diane Arbus' childhood. Some small things, more background issues, not so much the foreground of this happened and that happened and this happened, but small details like her mother putting white gloves on her hands when she played in the sandbox, or covering her eyes when she was looking at a homeless man in Central Park, or when she followed a little boy home who had a purple birthmark on his face, although I may be mixing that, putting two stories together, because I put those stories together in the script. But her fascination with the eccentricities of others and of herself that she had as a child that was then stopped and she was blinded from, literally, by her mother's hands. And how, after having two children and having a business with her husband and a loving relationship with her husband, how she then dug deep inside of her, refound her imagination and her relationship with her eccentricity, and made the bold move to become one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. And to affect all of us.
So in that discovery, or in the process of weaving the fact with the elements that you put together for it, was there a basis for Lionel, or was that something that you needed some way to open her up?
Well, there were a lot of Lionels in Diane Arbus's life. There were lots of subjects that she photographed, many, many, many. And there were, and then there was Marvin Israel, who was a big a muse for her, but a mentor. So what I wanted to do was, rather than be literal and show her in, you know, try to quickly jam into an hour and a half every relationship she had with every eccentric, every lesbian, every midget, every dwarf. What I want to do is stop and go, okay, we all know that. We all know that's what she did. Let's stop and examine one relationship. And will we be able to ever know what happened between her and her subject? No, I don't think so. That's something that is in the past and is a secret. And so what I tried to do was to combine the Marvin Israel character being the mentor with the subject or objects of her desires and her own imagination and herself. So the character of Lionel becomes what is a mixture of Israel, her subjects, and her own imagination, the relationship she developed with herself.
Now, I was also thinking, watching this, you know, it's not just the story, you know, based on Diane Arbus and everything, but I also felt it was like a story of a woman who is going through a self-discovery. The people in her life, I don't think anybody appreciates a woman going through self-discovery, in a sense. Can you talk about that aspect of the story and how you worked that out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you're right. I mean, we don't see a lot of movies about a woman involved in the act of self-discovery. And how do you dramatize that is the big question. I mean, you know, would it have been more realistic to have shown her depressed and then, you know, see the outward manifestations of what happens to a person as they struggle with becoming an artist. And we could have gone that way. I wanted to go, in a way, I wanted to be more truthful and go inside of her and to create a movie that was through her eyes, through her skin, through her groin, that in some ways reflected the way that I feel when I look a photograph by Diane Arbus, that the movie would maybe hit me in the same surprising way that her photographs hit me, which is that they can push me away, they can intrigue me, they can arouse me, they can confuse me, they can make me feel childish, they can make me feel depressed. There's so many things that come at you. And I tried as hard as I could to capture that in the making of the script, in her story.
I think that's a very interesting line of questioning about the examination of becoming self-aware, because I think in many ways you were exploring that in Secretary as well. Is this something that it takes a movie of this scale to do? We don't see this, you know, we say we don't see this that often. That's because so many of the movies that we do see are the big studio films where people are presented as types rather than as characters that are developed. Is that one of the reasons it's important that there be movies of this scale?
Well, even in some independent films, you'll not see that diving down all the time. I mean, it's sometimes just a matter of what the budget is that defines some film independent studio. But in terms of... You know, it's not like me to say it's important that there be films like this, so it's hard for me to answer the question. I just think it's important that artists be encouraged to speak with their own voices and to know their own voices. I think it's a life or death situation for people even who don't know that they're artists, to have the opportunity and the bravery to dig down deep and be themselves, as eccentric as they may be.
Say that important word, that's a terrible word. I apologize, but as I was saying it, that's usually one of the worst things you can say about a film. Say, this is an important word.
Well, I don't think so. It's just not the way that I look at things. I actually think, I mean, a lot of people do talk that way, but it's just not, but I do think some things are important, and it's exactly what I just said. I do think that is important, if not a life or death situation for artists. If you don't attend to the voice screaming inside of you, it could eat you and kill you, I think.
Could you talk a little bit about your writing process? And, you know, first of all, how the project came together, and then how you went about tackling the subject?
You know, Patricia Bosworth talks about the 20-year process of the script before I came on board in Vanity Fair, and so beautifully written. So I came on board. I still have never read a previous draft. So I came on board as if I was the first one, and tried to stay that naive. In other words, I tried to create was most perfect for me to write and for Steve Schoenberg to direct. The process is, you know, it's like any writing process. It's horrific, really. It was about lots of conversations with Steve Schoenberg, but it was mainly about sitting alone a lot at home on my couch, shuffling through cards, shuffling through images, trying to put together a story. I actually did it I did the final draft in my third trimester of pregnancy. So I stayed indoors. I was on leave from where I teach at Brown. And I was, I had Netflix. I had groceries delivered. I barely went down the stairs because I could barely walk down to my third story apartment. And my husband was away. So I was alone for 3 months with this nut job kicking me inside. And it was this incredible experience of writing about the birth of an artist as this kid was punching his way out of me. And I was 40, having a child for the first time and having spent my entire life as an artist, writing about Dionne Arbus, who was in her mid-30s with two children, becoming an artist. So there were two separate paths. I was also living, coincidentally, next door to where she used to live, on Washington Place, off Washington Square Park. And that was not significant necessarily in a way that you can see in the film, but it was really exciting to look out the window at the same things that she might have been looking at when she lived there. And the film really is about seeing and looking out. And I think of the windows in my apartment, I used to think of them as prosceniums for dramas outside. And so, and that sort of worked its way into the film, but in a way that I'm not sure you would even consciously notice. And as I was struggling with writing this film early on, a young man wearing only suits, artist, moved into the attic above me and made a lot of noise and pissed me off. And I went upstairs and told him to be quiet the first night he was there. And he opened the door, and he had very sweet eyes, and he apologized, and then later gave me a bottle of wine. And we became very good friends, and mainly because we were both stay-at-home, independently poverty-stricken artists who were too scared to go out our front doors. So we sort of created this relationship together through sounds. I felt someone was there. When I heard the pipes and when I heard the walking across the floor, I could hear him go pee at 4 a.m. We were sort of the coexisting as people do in Manhattan, as artists alone in their apartments through walls, hearing one another. And so it was that personal, private, lonely experience of what it is to be an artist in the mind that inspired me to want to tell that story of Dionne Arbus, not the story of the woman in cafes smoking cigarettes and meeting people and being a part of a group, but that woman who was isolated and alone trying to find her own voice inside of herself.
What did you think when you first saw it after it, the movie was finished and it's on the big screen and stuff? It's so visually delightful, I think, but what is it like to see those words?
I never had the experience of suddenly sitting down and seeing the film because I saw so many cuts of it, and I also was on set. So my first experience with it was walking onto the set the first day I was there, and it was empty. I think it was a lunch break. And, it's like walking into some, idea of your own brain. It's like taking some kind of drug and going, oh my God, there's the weird bed and all the things that I thought of, except taken to this extreme by Amy Danger, who was the production designer, to this, what's great is when you give someone material and they make it much better. And that's what she did, and that's what happened when I walked into this room. When Dionne walks into Lionel's apartment for the first time and walks around, I did that. I was alone, and it was a dark set, and I looked at everything and I was, you know, I felt like the luckiest girl in the world. And, you know, as a writer, you know, life is not that easy. So when these moments happen, I feel very blessed, and I felt very much like I was doing exactly what I want to be doing, which is writing films.
Perhaps when you talk about her going into the apartment for the first time, perhaps it was partly being driven by her artistic impulses or trying to find out what it is that she had inside her and how she needed to express it. But it seemed to me that she was a very modern woman, that not in the 1950s, some of the things that she chose to do were bohemian, at least, and just outrageous. And I'm sure her parents, as you express in the film, her parents were offended by it. Did you find yourself trying to relate her to attitudes today, or was she truly a product of her time?
Well, she's told through my eyes and through Stephen's eyes and through Nicole's eyes and Amy's eyes, and we are the product of today. So it's going to, you know, have that aspect to it. But no, I very much wanted her to be a woman in the late 1950s who crosses a line, a big line. Well, I was a photographer as a kid, and I was about 15 or 16, and I was studying photography, and I saw her work in class, and I just saw it around. I grew up in San Francisco in the 70s and the 60s, so I don't remember the moment of seeing it, but I do remember that I had an assignment to photograph friends. And I decided, I picked two women, girls I knew, who were lovers. And eventually we took all our clothes off, all of us, and painted each other's bodies. And I took photographs of this entire event, which some of the photographs included me in them, in a mirror or something. And these photographs were taken out of, I must say, an utter sweetness and naivete. And they were what I thought I was to do, because I was coming from a world that housed Deanne Arbus's vision already. So I was not doing anything transgressive, because it was the world I grew up in, which was the 70s San Francisco. This was that world that she photographed in some ways. So, sadly, once I was old enough, it was the 80s, and everything was bad again. So, even today it sounds shocking, a 15-year-old girl. You know, it sounds really shocking, but at the time it wasn't. So for a while this was an okay thing to do. It wasn't so shocking. So that would be my first memory of how she really got into my skin.
That's an interesting anecdote, because I think that the perspective of the journalist has changed over the time, over the years, where now it's okay for the journalist to be part of the story. Mm-hmm. Where it used to be, and I think she described herself, didn't she, as a photojournalist, and it used to be that the journalist was the observer, and yet you see something of her in all of her photographs, don't you?
Certainly, if you don't see her, which you don't in most every photograph, but you do see the reflection of her relationship with that person in the eyes of that person. And that's why I really thought it was important to create a film, if I could, that reflected the relationship that the person was having with her in their eyes. So that I hope at the end you see Lionel's eyes affected by what he's gone through or with her and his life, of course. You know, you could call her pictures self-portraits in a very strange way.
There's also, I thought, an interesting choice of not to show us the pictures. Was that part of your screenplay?
Well, we didn't have access to the photographs, so that gave an immediate challenge. So I had to make the decision that photographs would not be shown. And thank God, because I didn't want to make a movie at all with someone with a camera up to their eyes. I mean, that's not very interesting, I don't think. So in many ways, I was required to hold off on the photo taking in order to make a film in which we're interested. And I think that that paid off. I think it worked well. That what was interesting about Deanne Arbus was that the photographs were sometimes taken 10 years after she knew a person, like the Jewish Giant photograph that's so famous. She'd known him for 10 years. That's how you get the photo, by the 10 years prior, not by the click of the shutter that day. So what I wanted to start to look at was what happened before the photograph.
Is that what you were saying in the scene where she sits down on the bench at the end and asks if it's okay to photograph, but then you don't see her take a picture, we hear them developing it?
Yeah, I was interested in her taking her camera off. That part of the photographic process is putting the photographic process to the side, is removing the camera. And that started with when she walks into Lionel's apartment the first time, and I think the first thing he says to her is, in fact, it is the first thing he says in the script, is take off your camera, which is provocative and stripping, but it's also, let's wait.
Was Nicole your first choice? You know, was Nicole somebody that, you know, that made sense to you immediately, or was it...
Well, you know, the casting questions are more Steve Schoenberg questions because I wasn't involved in the casting. And when I write, I don't think of movie stars ever. I think of people. But I thought she was... I mean, I think she's sublime in it and outrageous. She was... I think it was originally cast with Samantha Morton and the deal fell through. And then we were very, very lucky to get Nicole after that.